Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. How are you? This is Your Voice Radio Network, Topics with Trish, live from the Red Room. Today is Thursday, April 13th. Thank goodness, not a Friday, the 13th. Anyway, we must be in some kind of weather pocket here because here in Breeze in the southern Illinois area, three beautiful days of spring weather, and it just keeps getting nicer. And of course, Saturday is supposed to be a really gorgeous day at 82 degrees and sunny. Robbie and some friends will be attending a ceremonial memorial for H to everyone out there who knew H and was a friend of his. God bless, and for his family, know that we remember you always and really enjoyed the time we had to spend with you. So anyway, on with today's show. This is part three. As I've been sharing, and as two Nanas at Noon, Donna Shear and Lee Roberts, along with Dr. Amelia Rose, the other team members who I'm so honored to share this programming with. All of us come here with a sincere passion inside to provide you, hopefully, with various topics that really do matter to you. Maybe some type of awareness month this month. Yes, it is Child Abuse Prevention Month and Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Now, they have them both in the same month. It's also a bunch of other National Awareness Month. And, you know, I've seen the different postings on Facebook, as have many of you, I'm sure. We really try to focus on being strong advocates, being voices, representing our thoughts and our experiences and our learned and studied and educated knowledge, but also about your community events, about something you're worried about in your child's school or maybe in your neighborhood or in our justice system or a case that you know about. You know, send it over to us, yourvoiceradio2017@gmail.com. yourvoiceradio2017@gmail.com. If you want to send it to a particular host, please do. Just tag it. You know, Donna, Lee, Dr. Rose, Trish. We will get it. If I get it, I will forward it on. Working together as a team, our society, along with every advocate across the country, the national organizations, one I'm very proud to be a part of, two actually, is the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, founded by Bill Murray, also creator of the LA Policing, Community Policing. Pardon me, sorry about that. As the weather changes, so do my allergies and my bronchitis. So we're going to keep going. Just forgive me for that. Anyway, also the other organization I'm proud to be a part of, Ms. Stephanie Mann's organization, Safe Kids Now National Network, teaching you how to provide street-safe kids and safe neighborhoods on all fronts. You know, it, not just about abuse and not just about family issues or what goes on inside their homes, but what about their schools? What about the school shootings? What about the, the events that happen in their neighborhood, the drug overdoses, the bullying, the breaking and entering issues, the, you know, whether or not services are provided to victims. I was really, really shocked the other day as I was trying to help a domestic violence victim try and find some relocation services and supportive services. I found out that, in fact, here in Illinois, at least in my part of Illinois, five counties that were provided assistance in domestic violence through the organization PAVE, P-A-V-E, based out of Centralia, Illinois, their doors are closed. Unfortunately, they can give you a resource if you call their number, but they are not currently helping any violent domestic violence victims and providing any shelter services. So, you know, our budget crisis is that bad, and I'm sure it's happening in your neighborhood to where you need to get a voice out there and work jointly to bring back services and bring back funding for these very much needed resources. You know, we can't help anyone if we're not providing supportive services when and where they're needed. Rural America is usually cut off on funding because of the small communities and the lower tax rates that bring people in the first place, the low crime rates. The one thing that does go on, though, that crosses every barrier, every boundary, every economic and social and societal and any other issue you can think of is the act of violence or harm that goes on inside our homes, you know, inside our families. We see it at barbecues, family barbecues that erupt into fistfights and, you know, somebody pushing and shoving or yelling and screaming and foul language and harassment and other things that go on just inside of our family circles, you know, and we don't want to report it as a crime. We want to say, hey, you know, this is my family member. But if you're not even looking for services to help you figure things out or sitting down and talking about these things, then how in the world are we going to teach our kids to come and talk to us or to understand why Aunt Carol keeps going off on these alcohol tangents or why Uncle Joe keeps, you know, having problems with chronic health problems and drug addictions. If we cannot talk about these problems, then how in the world are we going to provide services in communities and education that's going to be there to help our kids? And one set of kids, particular, you know, last week, last Thursday, we talked about our last Tuesday. Wow, has it been a week or more since I've done a show? Anyway. Last program, we did part two. We talked about how children of early ages, between the ages of 2 and 6, are supposed to come to you and actually explain something that might be going on that they don't even understand, that they don't have the language for. That video is also out there, shared here in the radio group. Just scroll down, you'll see it. This is part three of the continuation of Child Abuse Prevention Month on Your Voice Radio Network. We are talking about the distressing behaviors that we often see in our teenagers or preteens. Let's go today's group of kids. Let's focus on those from 10 to 14 years of age. It's a very awkward age. Their bodies and their senses and their behaviors and their mouth and their attitude and their expectations just continues to kind of like spiral out of control. The one statement that I used to make to each and every one of my kids, and I've said it 100 times to them, is, you know, it was like some little alien had climbed into their bodies in the middle of the night just before their 13th birthday. And then suddenly, as they blew out the candles on their cake, everything about my sweet, precious children, wonderful children, had changed. Okay, they suddenly had a mouth and they were talking back and they wanted to discuss why they were being grounded and how long and what could they get away with and what can't they get. You know what? I was glad that I was that kind. I'm glad that I was that kind of a mom, that if they had a question about some type of punishment that I had dealt out for something specific, they could always come to me and talk to me. They could reason with me. They could explain to me. They could, you know, kind of, I don't want to say manipulate me, but at least plead their case. And I think that every kid should be able to have that opportunity. It can't just be about, this is what I said, and just because I said so. Yeah, I did say that a couple of times. You know, clean up your room. Why? Because I said so. You know, just sometimes we don't necessarily have to have a reason for what we do. We're parents. And sometimes they get you so frustrated, you just want to give them a quick pop in the mouth and say, hey, you know, watch your mouth, watch your language. I'm not one of your street buddies out on, you know, out there that you hang with. I want you to be able to talk to me, but you also have to have respect for me. I am your parent. I want you respecting people when you meet them outside on the street. I don't care if you know them or you don't. Respect them. They are a human being. Now, if we look at some of these normal attitude behaviors, which can be bad enough, let's add into the mix a parent dealing with a health condition, which then puts them on opioid medications, and the frustrated other parent or that's having to help take care of them and be more involved in their lives than maybe what they weren't before. And what about that kid who doesn't have both parents? All they have is the one, and maybe there's some kind of addiction or alcohol or anger or mental health problems, emotional distress, past trauma problems, negative childhood experiences. A lot of things can affect how we parent our kids and how we live within our homes. And I'm not anyone to judge on how anyone else should or should not live inside their home. However, there is a certain level of safety that is part of our Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And also, since we live in America, it is part of our American Constitution and even the individual states who have their own constitutions usually have some form of protective human rights at their own level. This Universal Declaration of Human Rights grants every single person around the world, the right to freedom, to be free from harm and free from the fear of harm, to be free from slavery, to have equal representation in court for crimes or charges against you, to have your voice heard, and to live within yourself as you see fit. Now, we know that a lot of countries have divisions on religion and, you know, different issues like that, but human rights overall and what is and is not an offense against someone's human rights is something that is protected around the world. Now, each and every person has been influenced by the generation ahead of him or her. It is the, my parents went through things that I didn't go through. My grandparents, my great-grandparents, when I think about how people lived and, pardon me, the differences in what our society believed back then and what we believe today. It's not that many years ago when you think about how old human society really is. It's only been in the last 100 years that we've started saying, hey, you know what? Slavery is wrong. Maybe 200 years. Okay, whatever. Or, you know what? You know, we need to come united. How many years have we been saying that? 10, 20? Since the internet opened up the world, right? Okay. So, you know, if we have these human rights, but we are not living by them, and we are living within the behaviors of what we grew up with, trying to adjust the bad to become something better for our kids, when we still have traumas that we've not dealt with, then it is necessary for us to, you know, things will happen as we begin parenting our children. Things will happen that are going to trigger something for you. They're going to set you off. They're going to make you remember something that you didn't want to remember. They're going to make you feel something that you didn't want to feel ever again. So the CDC, actually has studied these reports across the country for the last decade or so. Now, on average, one in four homes are affected by some type of abuse or harmful action. One in four. I've said that a lot of times. That's my house, the house across the street, the house on the corner, and the house next door. That's what I have. You may have the apartment across the hall and two upstairs. You may have the trailer next to you and the trailer next to you and the trailer across from you. Whatever situation you have, you know, remember that there are distress signals that you, anyone, can be made aware of as to what to watch for. You know, if you see lots of random traffic coming and going, and maybe the kids are pushed outside whenever traffic is there, but, you know, you could also have it to where, you know what? Don't ever see the kids at all. Coming home from school or going to school is the only time we see them. I think that not sending our kids outside to play, let alone getting some fresh air, connecting with something outside, maybe putting down their phone for 5 seconds, it's necessary for complete development. And, you know, I remember the days of my kids getting to that age to where they want Nintendo and PlayStation were just coming out whenever my kids were young, or at that teen, preteen age. And I can remember them wanting to sit inside 24/7 on a beautiful sunny day, instead of being outside and going to a friend's house. Or, you know, if they wanted to, you know, get involved in something that was going, you know, it was just beginning then. And nowadays, it's even worse. So I want to remind everyone as we go on through this topic, if you want to call the studio, please do. You can reach me at 929-477-2779. If you want more information on Your Voice Radio Network, visit our website, www.yourvoiceradio.one, O-N-E. I always mess that up. Anyway, moving on. Okay, so as we look at distressing behaviors of teens, I've got a couple of slides I'm going to use here as given in the various trainings and things that I've done speaking or in the trainings with foster parents. You know, I was amazed in the foster parents group at just how many actually contacted me or came up to me after the presentation and said, you know what, now I understand exactly what it is they're going through and why they get so upset and why they seem so anxious and why some of these things are so distressing to them whenever they're really simple little problems that can be worked out if we can teach the kids to take a breath, to calm themselves, center themselves, focus. What is it disturbing you right now, at this moment? What is it? Let's talk about it. Can I help you? Is there something I can do to help you with it? Kids between 10 and 14, they have their biological changes. They have their physical changes. They have their relationship changes. They have sometimes relocation changes. You know, they're just going through a very, very awkward stage. Most of them don't feel good about themselves anyway because of body shaming and bullying. They find it very difficult to accept themselves just as they are. And if we as parents can remember what that felt like, it gives us an upper hand in helping our kids to understand some of the situations that they're going through. I've had the pleasure lately to be spending time with my grandson and around his friends. And, you know, he's at that age, and it's awesome to be around that group of kids and to hear some of the things, you know, that they talk about or that, you know, they think that I'm not listening to. And, you know, some of the things that the parents and the direct care workers and the families and, you know, the organizations, some of the things that are brought to me whenever I'm speaking are different situations that each person knows another person going through. And when we collectively look at them, we realize that, you know what, one of these alone may not mean something, but when you have 5, 6, 7 signs of these, you know, come on, you know, where's the red flags? Hello, help me. You know, we have to do what is expected of us as adults. There are some things that we can talk to our kids about and just kind of help them understand a little bit better, help them cope better, help them find services of support for their family, or maybe talk a relative into getting help for an addiction or getting help for mental health services or something. You know, kids have a great influence on their family members and even their neighbors. So even to involve them in a way that you can say, hey, you know, if one of your friends or one of your neighbors or one of your family is going through something, then you're talking about it to someone who can possibly help you figure out what to do with it instead of carrying this on their very, very young shoulders. Now, there are a lot of things that our teens will carry on their shoulders. Some of those things they have to. It's part of life. You know, every life cannot be perfect and beautiful and full of unicorns and rainbows. And in fact, I don't know of any life that is. I think it is more that, you know, each and every one of us have something that we've gone through that's been traumatic. And each and every one of us at some point in our lives can relate to some of the things that we see these 10 to 14 year old kids going through, not just their physical and biological changes, but how a negative environment affects them and some early distress signals. And I want to go over those distress signals with you. Now, the presentation that I do is titled A View from the Inside, Family Crimes and Human Trafficking. It's a strong topic, I know. And to label it family crimes, very difficult, right? What I try to focus on is the very, very small act of difficulties within our family homes to the really, really harmful and almost life-threatening situations. So starting very, very small where it may not want to be reported or classified as a crime, but on the other end of that spectrum, these little early warning signals could very well end up being something very, very serious. That child may have gone the first 10, 12 years of their life since birth, or since a second child was born, or since something changed about their home life. And then suddenly here they are faced with this, you know, sudden spin in the environment itself, and you know they no longer feel cared for, and they feel like they are always in competition with other members of the family, that they don't have a system they can go to, they don't have a person they can speak with, they are alone, and they are struggling to kind of figure it out, and what am I going to do with this? Sometimes these signals that you see are, you know, as I said, are very, very slight and they're normal. It is a collective of these signals. And when I do my presentations, it is about trying to bring the very, very small into the very, very large and what something so simple outside could look like something so horrific inside. That's why we need early intervention and at least one person, at least one, paying attention to what's going on and how we can help others. I hope our viewers are enjoying the show and gaining something from it. If you have a comment that you would like to share while watching the video, please do. I can see it, and I would absolutely love to share any input you've got. If you want to call the studio, please do, 929-477-2779. Even though I don't have everything I need to hook up for a live video interview type situation, we will get through it. Anyway, all right, so distress and early intervention. Some of the things that I want to talk about here, let me go back to my slide here. Okay, with 1 in 4 homes, as quantified by the CDC, inside those homes, it may be something as simple as angry moments that end up being quite aggressive. Maybe they lead to some type of violent threat. If there's alcohol or drugs involved, maybe weapons are brandished or threatened to be brandished. And if you can imagine, and this is only a little personal share to give an example, so forgive me if I trigger anyone, not my intention. My intention is to get your attention, and hopefully you'll think about something. The first time for me that I saw a weapon, I was 9 years old. My stepfather had actually cocked his 12-gauge shotgun and pointed it right here. It was just like within an inch away from my face, and he held it there while he swore at me and called me every horrible name you can think of. I was 9. Most of the words, I didn't even know what they were. You know, many of them I had heard so much before that they were nothing new to me. But the one thing that he said, and I'll never forget it, and it was so terrifying, and it was very, very real. And his sister was trying to get him to put the weapon down, get it away from my face. She had come in for a visit. She was an adult woman in her late 30s, very spunky and very involved and very nice. She was trying to get him to calm down and get the weapon away from my face. I had done something very, very simple that, because he was drinking, triggered him to get angry, and suddenly I was the enemy and the gun was in my face. A shotgun, double barrel shotgun. It was horrible. I'll never, ever, ever forget it. When my aunt intervened, she kind of shoved me out of the way, and I took off like a bolt of lightning out the back door, and I ran down the street to the cemetery, and I started praying, and I started asking, and I started begging, and I started crying, and I broke down. There was nobody around that I could have gone to with that. That was on me to carry. I still had to go to school. I still had to talk to my friends. Back then, most kids were kicked out of the house during the day, which we definitely were. Go play outside, go do this, go do that. You know, mine was clean this, clean that, get back here, da-da-da-da-da. Anyway, think of a kid in a situation where alcohol sets off some kind of a PTSD trigger for somebody else. Or, you know, because if they're that buried in alcohol and they've got that anger and rage situation going on, there's going to be some type of deeper trauma in there. So we want to be sure that we are realizing, okay, what's causing this parent to act like this? Is it a mental health disorder? Is it a past child traumatic experience? We need to find out, and we need to find out in a hurry. So how does that 9-year-old, how does that 10-year-old, 12-year-old, 13-year-old, how did they carry on and pretend that everything's normal? Can they? Okay, so some of the things I want, you know, you to look for is, you know, immediate effect as a result of trauma against a developing child. Has been looked at from early childhood through teens. Now, I study information that is gained from the National Institute of Mental Health, the Centers for Disease and Control, National Child Traumatic Stress Network, Psychology Today, National Institute of Health. Okay, I try to keep my information and the National Department of Health and Human Services as well. I try to keep my information to what I have gained in those studies and what I've learned at various certification trainings that I've gone through. So some of the things I want you to think about for these 10 to 14-year-old kids. An increased heightened attention to responses of others. Somebody yells, you know, most of the kids ignore it completely. They freeze. It gets their attention. Following directions to exact until told to do otherwise. Get in there and clean up your room. They don't mess around. They don't push those buttons. Submissive personality. They will let their friends, they want to make sure that they have friends, so they will go over, above, and beyond to have those friends, to develop an outside social circle that makes them feel normal. So they will, you know, they may take a gift of money and, you know, treat their friends to, you know, a snack, or, you know, they may buy somebody a soda, or, you know, they may offer to buy the entire gang an ice cream. I don't know, but those are the kind of things that they will go, you know, they will even let another kid beat them up without responding and without defending themselves, just kind of curling up into a ball and backing away so that they're not perceived as a threat and they're not the one that people are talking about, or that they are, you know, they usually end up being the bullied victims, the bullied kids, you know, because once a child of that same age who is being dominant because of actions that are being done, because it can go that way as well. You know, they can have gone through these actions or live with these threats and these outbursts on a daily basis. And they may think that, okay, this is how I'm supposed to treat other people because nobody else is teaching them any differently. Maybe their emotional responses are so honed in on how to react that they cannot react in any other way other than being completely manipulative and abusive towards others, or doing everything and giving of themselves completely in order to build and have those friendships, or at least in some form those friendships. It may not be the most sincere and most bonded, but, you know, those friends may very well take advantage of that person, but indeed to them it's some type of friendship. Of course, anytime you feel that there is inappropriate sexual knowledge. Okay, now this is difficult because, you know, 10 to 14, they are also going through those sexual changes and those hormonal changes. Okay, the national average age for a girl to lose her virginity in 2017 is age 11. I can't even think about that because, you know, 11-year-olds are not ready for this. There's too much going on. There's too many ways that their lives are going to change, and they're going to think back on this, and they're going to think, wow, what made me do that? What was going on in my life that I thought at 11 years old it was okay to have sex? Usually there's been some kind of sexual influence for them. You know, maybe they've seen something they shouldn't see. Maybe it was accidental. But maybe, just maybe, there is porn accessible for them, or even going on while they're in the home. Maybe there is constant talk about sexual activities in front of them. I mean, not just what they're talking about with their friends, but friends take things that they hear from other people to the friends in their circle. So if an 11-year-old knows something, they most definitely are going to take that something and use it as a guess what topic in their little special circle. So, okay, when they know inappropriate sexual knowledge for their age, no matter how old they are, think about what, not what you consider to be appropriate sexual knowledge, because maybe your boundaries aren't the best judgment. I know mine weren't. And, you know, I can't say that, you know, I didn't do some inappropriate behaviors whenever I was a mom, you know, drinking on the weekends, or maybe flirting too much, or maybe bringing too many men around. You know, there is a lot of things that a wounded soul will do without even realizing that it's connected to something else. Helping myself understand why I had done certain things kind of helped me to forgive myself a little bit on some of the choices that I made. But I'm absolutely confident that I know I did the very, very best that I could do. And I finally working at releasing a lot of that guilt that I have carried as a parent for a long, long time. We don't want to do that with the next generation. As grandparents, we become more knowledgeable and maybe more heightened as aunts and uncles, as adult friends, as co-workers, you know, as community members, church groups, you know, Boy Scout leaders and cheerleaders and track leaders and sports, you know, you name it. You're the one connecting with that child. You're the one that is, you know, instead of having 30 kids in front of you, you know, in a sealed off classroom, you know, you've got 30 active kids that are trying to work off something or trying to focus on achieving something. You know, if something is distressing them, you're usually going to pick up on it, or maybe you can build a relationship with them that they feel that trust, that they can open up and speak to you. Self-harm is always most absolutely very distressing and early warning sign of something else that's going on, whether it's cutting, whether it's eating disorder, whether it is self-degradation or degrading remarks about themselves. I can never do anything right, and God, I'm an ugly kid, or nobody likes the way I look, or I hate the shape of my head, or whatever. You know, you have a chance to influence something positive about that and turn that negative into a positive. Lack of healthy hygiene, lack of medical care, lack of dental care. You know, these are all clues that something about that child isn't being looked after properly. Maybe it's because lack of insurance, lack of finances, you know, which there are resources of help available. And, you know, since more and more are having these problems, it most definitely is something that, you know, we need to make sure that the funding is there for. Lack of interest in certain people, places, and things that used to excite them. You know, loved going over to Tommy's house. All of a sudden don't want to hang out at Tommy's. Is there a problem with the relationship with Tommy? Does Tommy do something or say something that gets you upset? Does something happen over at Tommy's house that doesn't happen at home? Maybe they would rather be at Tommy's house, and they're always at Tommy's house. So maybe Tommy's parents are the ones to say, hey, you know, doesn't Mama fix dinner for you? Don't you eat dinner with your family? You know, does anybody do your homework with you? Little things mean a lot to a kid. Someone actually, someone outside that circle that they're struggling with, asking and being proactive in building a relationship with them on a safe level. Not one that is being deviant, and not one that your kid is coming home and saying, you know what, I really don't like hanging out with them. And, you know, of course, there's grooming people who will take your kid, do everything with them, buy them everything, get them on their good side and tell them they are everything. And then all of a sudden one day, while you trust them with your kid, something really, really bad happens. And, you know, their personal sense is violated, and they're told to keep quiet, and they're told, you know, I'll buy you this, I'll get you that, we can do more of this. So be careful and open up that communication door. If you have an opportunity to be close to a kid, whether it be in a school environment, in a community environment, in a family environment, if you're the one connecting with that kid and you see them in distress, it's your duty your duty to be someone they can reach out to, someone they can talk to. You know, all of these difficulties that are this age of kids has increases the probability of joining street gangs or getting into mischievous crime, vandalism, or maybe even more violent crimes. They become runaways. They become throwaways, which absolutely flabbergasted me when I started looking at runaway children versus abuse on an article that I did about 4 years ago. I was really amazed by how many, approximately some 2,000 children or more a year, are actually qualified as being throwaway children. That means their parents, for whatever reason, have told them, you need to find someplace else to live. Throwaways. Just, I don't care what you do, just get out of here. You cannot stay here anymore. Now, maybe that, who knows what that kid's going through? But to put them out on the street when they are not even old enough to work or to know how to live or to be able to make safe choices and safe judgments for themselves, how dare you? How dare you? What would make you do such a thing? Behavioral mistreatment towards others, improper sexual activity, high-risk personality traits. Those, you know, they take something very, very small. A kid who's been through a difficult life, if they're in a safe life and things are good for them and pretty much stable, maybe it's not perfect, but it's good, okay? They will still, you know, until they learn and hopefully get help with a professional, with a counselor or with someone who's certified and educated in working with them, their behaviors are going to distinctly be filled with anxiety. They can't find something. Suddenly it is like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. They cannot talk to a certain person. It is a crushing, crushing blow. They cannot tell their mom or their dad everything that's going on. You know, they feel like they don't have a support system inside. They feel like a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a step-parent or a grandparent or somebody that they're not fully connected to, maybe through DNA, but has come into the family and has been in the family for a long time. And maybe there's new adjustments and changes, or maybe there's been an ongoing, constant negative relationship between that child and that other person. You know, whether it be a stepbrother or a half-brother or, a parent or a boyfriend or a girlfriend, whatever, it doesn't matter. If they're having that conflicting relationship, who do they talk to about this? What do they say? You know, and how do they perceive those actions and those choices that this other parent or authoritative person may be wanting what's best for them and trying to help them through, but isn't fully paying attention to the underlying effects that they've learned how to survive in. And everything becomes a crisis, and everything becomes negative, and everything becomes an act or a statement against them. And, you know, instead of taking it as a joke that you were teasing them about, you know, being tall or short or blonde or brunette or blue-eyed or brown-eyed or, you know, funny nose or a funny smile, or when you're doing that or commenting about anything about their physical self or their inner self or their actions, the way they talk, the way they maybe they don't have the same educational knowledge as other people in the family do or other kids. Maybe they've come from, you know, like I said, they've come from that negative past. So now they're, you know, getting into this mix of a quote-unquote normal, healthy awesome family. How are they supposed to adjust? Yeah, it's amazing. It's great. It's beautiful. But there's also all of this turmoil that's lying just underneath the surface, and all it takes is a little bit of something to start setting it off. And what can be acting and discussing and connecting as a normal, healthy, developing family, that child doesn't have those skills to do that. And they have to be helped to find those skills, and it takes time and it takes patience to develop those skills and to learn how to live happy and just accept things as not a constant offense against them or a constant judgment against them, but just something you're trying to do to make their life a little bit better in the long run. Okay, so moving on. If I can get my computer to work, there it goes. Okay. Now, as I said, you know, there are many, many different types of harms that happen throughout different stages. The highest group of children that are actually harmed, and it's normally through neglect, that is the 0 to 2 year old age, with some over 6,000 that were reported back in 2014. In the 10 to 17 year old group, you've got 7,500 and some, okay? Now, I know that that is a wide group. That 16 to 17 year old stage, that's 15 to 17. It's a different stage. We'll talk about that next time. You know, different kind of tensions that you deal with. But that 10 to 14 year old stage, we need to watch them. Some 5,000 alone are in that 10 to 14 year old stage. And different types of harms happen to different genders of children at different ages in life, and have different effects, because we are all wonderfully different as human beings, and our chemical makeup is different. And even though you got the same mom and the same dad that may make 3 or 5 children together, each and every one of those children are going to be different. While they may have similar traits, each one's going to perceive things differently and have their own personalities. So in the 2014 of what was reported, female genders that were reported as maltreatments came back at 46,000 plus, making it 49.6%. The male victims were 45,600, so very, very close, at 49.1%. So it's almost 50-50. Things change over the years and different abuses happen, different genders, different kids, different homes, different families, okay, different offenders. So be aware. Moving on, we also want to cover, you know, the predators, the offenders, the family members that might be more aggressive. Inside a family is the most dangerous place for a kid. Sad but true. That's where some 92% of all types of harm occur to our kids, even if it's just emotional or if it's, you know, unfortunately physical or even worse, maybe sexual. 92% of it happens inside the home. Female offenders so far reported is 134. Not many women get convicted as sex offenders. And I want to real quick touch on a comment that came from a teenager the other day, a young teen. The comment was, nobody listens to boys or men whenever they report being sexually touched or raped. Nobody says, we will help you. Nobody says anything. They just say, It's what they do. It's normal. Don't worry about it. Nobody listens. Nobody helps. But yet girls, as soon as they say that somebody's touched them or somebody has a picture of them or they think that somebody says something to them, then get in trouble and we get labeled as the bad guys. Why don't they listen to us? I don't know. Why don't we? Because our society hasn't come that far yet? Because we don't think that men and boys can be victims? I am a strong voice for anyone, any gender, going through this crap. I don't care how old you are. I don't care if you are 1 year old, 1 day old, or if you are 100 years old. Nobody deserves it. Everybody deserves respect. And if they've done something to offend you, then it needs to get resolved in some form, either by discussing it or getting the resources that you need to make it better. But it's really bad whenever families cannot come together for the best welfare of all children involved. Male offenders that were reported did make up almost 1,700. Family offenders alone counted for 1,255 cases. Other offenders, only 600. So it's 50% more likely that a kid is going to experience a traumatic childhood experience within their home. Okay? And two last parts of information that I want to go over real quick. We only have about 3 minutes before the radio show ends. There's a step that I try to help everyone do, as whether they be adults or whether they be teens or whether they be trying to overcome some type of illness or some type of harm, some type of challenge. There's steps in daily recovery development that I always share. And these are things that you can work on with the kid. You can outline it for them and help them make a plan. Number one and foremost is a list of safety support persons and their telephone numbers. Those who can get to you, those who are there for you to talk to you on the phone, you need that list. A list of your daily goals. I need to clean out my closets. I need to go to the grocery store. I need to go meet Tommy for lunch. I need to go meet Susie to go roller skating. I need to get my homework done. I need to research this material. Whatever it is, put your daily goals down. As you achieve them, mark them off and give yourself a gold star for each one because you had the focus and you had the attention that you actually got it done. That is a changing learned behavior. Oh, I jump whenever I get that warning voice in my head. Sorry. Okay, list of your medical and emotional wounds. You need to get help for those. List of your positive attributes. What's really awesome about you? What is it that's helped you get through to this point and makes you so awesome for others? Behavioral changes. You got to learn how to cope with triggers and how to develop better communication. List your dreams and go after them. You know, because regardless of what you may or may not have been through, when you believe in your possibility, others will believe in your ability. You deserve a safe place to sleep. You deserve respect. You deserve kindness and support. You deserve as much love as you freely give to others. You deserve roses in your garden of life. Thanks for watching Topics with Trish on Your Voice Radio Network. Coming up tomorrow, tune on us at noon, and every Monday evening, Dr. Amelia Rose. Have a great day, everyone. Enjoy the sunshine. God bless. Thank you.